morning. It's good to see everyone out. Just to add a little bit to Mary Ellen's daughter-in-law, Sandy. She is home. That's a good thing, but they did find she has rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, and they're trying to get her blood pressure regulated to a more stable couple of numbers. So she's kind of finding out a whole lot all at once. So for sure, keep her in prayers, because that's a lot of adjustments to have to make at one time. And so, again, keep that family in your prayers. It is good to see everyone out this morning. I hope your week went well, but if it didn't, please let us know if there's a way that we can help you. I try to remind us often that we can't help with what we don't know about, that you have to let us know, and we want to help because we are family, and we should be sharing each other's burdens. We also want you to know that if you're not a member here at the Colcord Church of Christ, that we want to know your struggles as well. We want to know how that we can reach out to you, how we might be able to help you, how we might be able to pray for you. So if you're not a member here, or you're watching online, maybe even for the first time, we want you to know that we are here to help in any way that we can. Well, we've been in the middle of a series called Resurrected Living, and we've been talking about the resurrection, but we're talking about it going beyond just believing that the resurrection is true. A few weeks ago on Easter, we said that there was a certain lifestyle that was attached to believing in the empty tomb. That if we believe in the empty tomb, if we believe that the Son of God not only offered himself as the atoning sacrifice for our sins, and that God raised him up from the dead, but that he reigns now as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. If we believe that is true, then there is a certain lifestyle, a certain way of living that is attached to that belief system. If we believe that is true, then we ought to live a certain way. Again, two weeks ago, we talked primarily how we think, that if we believe that the tomb is empty, if we believe that Jesus is raised, if we believe that he lives and reigns, how should we think? And Paul says at the beginning of Colossians 3 that we should focus on, we should set our minds on, seek the things that are above in places where Jesus is at the right hand of God rather than on the earthly things. But we have to go beyond just how we think. We have to talk about how we live. What are the things we do, and what are the things that we don't do if we believe in the empty tomb? And if we believe in the empty tomb and we believe that our lifestyle, our way of living has been transformed, what's going to bring about, or what brought about that transformation? What really brings about transformation from the old person, the person that we were before we believed in Jesus, to the new person, the one we are now, who believes in Jesus, who believes that the tomb is empty and that Jesus lives and reigns? What brings about that transformation? So we're looking at the book of Colossians, and the church of Colossae here, who Paul is writing this letter to, there are all kinds of false teachers who are teaching that the transformation comes by having this certain knowledge, or maybe even keeping these certain rules. Don't eat these certain foods. Don't do anything that is pleasurable. Don't get married. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't touch this. Don't taste that. Don't do these things, because transformation comes about by observing and submitting to these rules and regulations. Now Paul not only rebukes those that are teaching this, but he goes on to rebuke the church at Colossae for submitting to these rules and regulations. We'll look at Colossians chapter 2, verse 20, and we looked at this last week. He said, "If with Christ you died to the elemental spirits of the world, why, as if you were still alive in the world, do you submit to regulations? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch," referring to things that all perish as they are used, according to human precepts and teachings. "These have indeed an appearance of wisdom in promoting self-made religion and asceticism and severity to the body, but they are of no value in stopping the indulgence of the flesh." And pay attention to what Paul says here. He says they are of no value in stopping the indulgence of the flesh. The rules and the regulations are of no value in stopping the indulgence of the flesh. Rules have no power to conquer sin. Only Jesus has the power to conquer sin. Rules don't. I think that has a lot of applications for us today as Christians. There are far too many Christians and probably far too many churches that spend way too much time preaching rules rather than preaching Jesus. We spend more time preaching do not handle, do not taste, do not touch than we do preaching Jesus. If we do that, then we've got things backwards. If we spend more time preaching rules than preaching Jesus, then we are not preaching the gospel. The gospel is not a set of rules. The gospel is not a set of regulations. The gospel is the good news that the tomb is empty and that Jesus, the Son of God, lives and reigns as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's the gospel. That's the good news. And Paul says, if you spend your time preaching, do not taste and do not touch and do not handle. If you spend your time, all your time preaching these rules, it sounds good. It has the appearance of wisdom, but it has no power to stop the indulgence of the flesh. These rules cannot conquer sin. Only Jesus can. Embracing the good news is what changes our lives. Adopting the resurrection as our framework for living is what brings about transformation in our lives. Some people have asceticism, where they follow all the rules. Don't do anything pleasurable. Do nothing that feels good. Only do what is strict. That asceticism becomes their framework for their living. Now, on the other extreme are those who practice hedonism for their framework of living, where they do whatever is pleasurable and feels good. There are those who adopt being pragmatic as their framework for living. Only do what leads to and results in what you want to get out of things. Only do what is practical. But the gospel, the good news, invites us to embrace and adopt the resurrection as our framework for living. And that's what Paul is talking about here in this passage. If you died to the elemental spirits of the world, why then are you submitting to these things? And you remember the verse we read a few weeks ago, chapter 3, verse 1 of Colossians says, if you've been raised with Christ, seek things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things that are above, not on the things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will appear with him in glory. Again, adopting the resurrection as the framework for your identity, for your lifestyle. Who am I? Well, I am one who has died to the things on this earth and has been raised up to live with Jesus. A totally different, a totally new, renewed human being with a new lifestyle. Not just someone who believes in Jesus that Jesus has been raised, but someone who has adopted the resurrection as the framework for their entire life. Let's look at verse 5. He says, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you: sexual immorality, impurity, passions, evil desires, covetousness, which is idolatry. Just a couple of things I want us to recognize there. Number one is food isn't the problem. Stuff isn't the problem. The people in Colossae were trying to encourage the Christians to not eat these certain foods. Don't do these certain activities. Don't touch this. Don't handle this. As if those things are where the problems lie. As if the problem was in the food. But how many times have we made rules about certain things as if the problems were in those things? As if you touch this thing or that thing, that touching is what makes you sinful. But God wants them to recognize that they need to put to death, therefore, what is earthly. Where at? In you. That's where the problem lies. We have to recognize that the problem lies in me. I have to deal with the problem in me. It's not just about don't taste, don't touch, don't go there. It's about the problem that exists in me, the earthly desires. And remember, we talked a few weeks ago about treasure, pleasure, and power, and that those things exist in our hearts. And that's the first thing that we have to recognize. If our lives are going to be transformed in keeping with the resurrection, then I have to recognize the earthly desires. The real problem of sin exists in my heart, and that is where it has to be put to death. The earthly things that exist in me, the earthly things that exist in you have to be put to death, Paul says. And that's what I mean when I say to adopt the resurrection as the framework for our life. Who we are, what are we called to be, what sort of lifestyle should we live as followers of Jesus who believe in the empty tomb. Paul says, if you believe in the empty tomb, if you've been raised with Jesus, then you're going to have to mortify, to put to death, execute, put an end to the desires in you that are earthly, the desires that elevate and idolize. When you covet something, wealth, power, you are making an idol of that thing. And when you celebrate Jesus and the fullness that we have in Jesus, then you realize that none of those things have anything to offer you. You don't have to have rules about all these things because, again, you realize that those things are powerless. They have nothing real to offer you. When you recognize that those things, the sins that go with them, the sin that you have to undertake to acquire those things, you recognize that none of those things have anything to offer you. You have everything you need in Jesus Christ. That's how you execute those things that are earthly inside you. Sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desires. And then in verse 6 he says, on account of these things, the wrath of God is coming. In these you too once walked when you were living in them. But now you must put them away, or put them all away. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices. And notice what Paul talks about, this earthly way of living, that this is something that has to be put to death. And then he uses the phrase, put it away or put it off, as if this old self is like dirty, defiled clothes that have to be stripped off and thrown away. All of it. It has nothing to offer you. That there is of no value in being the old person anymore. There is no value in living that way. All of these things have nothing to offer you because you have fullness. You have fulfillment in the risen and the reigning Lord. And because you embrace the empty tomb and because you embrace the resurrection as the framework for living, you say, I'm going to put to death those things inside of me that are earthly. I'm going to put those things away, like anger and wrath and malice and slander and obscene talk from our mouths and lying to each other, that we are done with those sorts of things. We all struggle with those things, though, don't we? We still continue to struggle with them, but if we think it's just about rules that's going to bring about transformation, then we misunderstand what transforms people. Those rules have the appearance of wisdom, self-made religion and asceticism, but they are powerless to stop the indulgence of the flesh. If you want to change your lifestyle, then you have to adopt the resurrection as your mental framework for how you live your life. You have to see yourself as a person that every time these desires rear their ugly heads in your heart, every time that you covet something, every time immorality or every time impurity or wrath or malice, any of those things, that we have the pleasure, that we have a duty to put those things to death, to execute it, to say, I don't want to live that way any longer. I don't want to be the kind of person who harbors those things in my heart. I want to put it away. I want to strip it off. I want to take it off and put it away and put it to death. And then he says in a more positive light in verse 10, and have put on the new self. So we put off the old self and its practices, and we've put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Here there is not Greek, Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is all and in all. Again, put off the old self and put on the new self that is being renewed in knowledge. It's this knowledge that brings about renewal. Rules don't bring about renewal. Regulations don't bring about renewal. Jesus didn't just come to offer us a new set of rules. Jesus came to offer us the knowledge of who he is and his love and his faithfulness and his conquering of sin and death and reigning as king. It's this knowledge of the good news, this knowledge of the Spirit who lives within us that brings about the renewal. Paul's prayer for the church at Colossae is that they wouldn't allow themselves to submit to or be enslaved by these rules and regulations that have the appearance of wisdom and godliness. You seem very pious when you are a rule follower, but the rules themselves cannot conquer sin. They cannot bring renewal. They cannot bring transformation. No philosophy outside of the framework of the gospel of Jesus Christ can bring about renewal and transformation. And the only thing that is going to bring renewal is the knowledge of the Creator who has done all of these things for you. Then he says, we're not going to be the kind of people or the kind of place that says, I'm a Jew and you're a Gentile, or I'm circumcised and you're not, or you're a barbarian, you're an uncivilized people. He says, no. But Christ is all. Christ is all that matters. He's the only one that matters, and Christ is in all. That he's in us as he is in everything, and knowing this and accepting this and embracing this is what brings about this sort of transformation. And then he says here in verse 12, put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other. As the Lord forgives you, so you must also forgive. Again, he's telling them to put on all these practices, but he's not doing it as they're just rules to follow, or they're just regulations to observe, or they're a philosophy to accept. He's saying put all these on. Why? Because you are God's chosen ones. You are holy. You are beloved. Because of who you are in Jesus, because your old self has been crucified with Jesus and has been buried in the waters of baptism, and now you've been raised up with Jesus and you've been resurrected with Jesus at your baptism, you are now God's chosen ones. You are God's holy ones. You are God's beloved ones. And because that is true, this is how you should live. There is a lifestyle that is attached to the resurrection. There is a lifestyle in believing in the empty tomb. If you believe the tomb is empty, if you've adopted that death and that resurrection as your way of living, then this is what it should look like. Not only putting those things away, like sexual immorality and coveting things and wrath and impurity and anger and slander and malice, not only putting away those things, but putting on as God's chosen ones, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, forgiving each other. And then he says here in verse 14, and above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. And just think about that phrase just for a second. He says, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts. And that word rule means to call the shots, to be the one who decides what is right and what's wrong, what flies here and what doesn't. He's saying it's not your desires that call the shots. He's saying if you believe in the resurrection, if you've adopted this way of living as Jesus being raised from the dead as your framework for living, I'm going to put to death the things that are earthly in me, and I'm going to live as one who is chosen and holy and beloved, and he's been raised up with Jesus. And then, if that's going to be the case, then the peace of Christ rules in my heart. That the peace of Christ is what gets to call the shots inside of my heart. Not my desires, not my pride, not my anger, not what I want, not what is necessarily pleasurable, not what is pragmatic, not what sounds good, but what seems wise, or not seems wise, but what is the peace of Christ dwelling in my heart? What would Christ have me to do? You see the way it looks in a church family. It's the way I see how it works in this church family, that the peace of Christ rule in their hearts. The peace of Christ is what gets to call the shots. Again, not our pride or our fear or our egos. The peace of Christ rules in our hearts, if indeed we have accepted and embraced the resurrection as a framework for living. Verse 16 says, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him." Our thinking and our behavior, our words and our deeds are transformed by what? Rules and regulations? Philosophies? Self-made or man-made religion? Asceticism? Not doing anything pleasurable? It's not. These things cannot bring transformation to our words and deeds. What brings about transformation is the word of Christ, the message of Jesus, the knowledge of Christ, the peace of Christ. This is what brings about transformed living. He says, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts. Let the knowledge of Christ, the knowledge of the Creator, renew you." Then, when that is the case, everything we do and everything we say can have Jesus in it. And that should be the goal, isn't it? That everything we do in word and deed, we do in the name of the Lord. We do it as Jesus would do it. We do it as transformed people. I don't know about you, but I've got a really long ways to go in that. At crucifying and putting death the things in me that are earthly, the desires that are earthly, pride, arrogance, the desire for pleasure, the fear of death, so many things that are in me that are earthly that need to be put to death, and I need to put on this way of living, and the only way to do that is to let the words of Christ dwell in you richly. And the way that happens is this: it's singing together. It's praying together. It's teaching each other. It's admonishing one another so that the word of Christ dwells in us richly, and that the word of Christ and the peace of Christ and the knowledge of Christ, it brings about transformation. It brings about this new and this better way of living. So here's where I want us to land this morning. Resurrection renews our hearts and reforms our lives. Resurrection, not rules. Resurrection, not regulation, but resurrection renews our hearts and reforms our life. That's what brings about renewal. That's what brings about transformation, knowing the resurrection of Jesus, but then also embracing that and adopting that as our way of living. Our mental framework for everything that we do, when a desire pops up in our hearts or our minds and we ask, "Can I do that? Can I fulfill that? Is that something that will bring God glory? Is that something that I do in love? Is that something that makes this world, my family, my neighborhood, a better place? Or is this something that belongs to my earthly desire, to my old self, something that I need to put to death, something that needs to be put off and put away? Everything we do, everything we say, we need to try to run it through that filter. To have it run through this framework and say, is this something that needs to be put to death or something in me that needs to be put on? Is this a resurrected way of living? Is this a way of living and thinking that the resurrection of Jesus and your resurrection as those who have been buried with Jesus in baptism and raised up with him, is this resurrection that brings renewal and reform to our lives? That's why I think all of our homes have to be a place where Jesus is preached, because that's really the only chance that I have. That's the only chance our spouses have. That's the only chance our children have. The only chance our neighbors have of experiencing the life that Jesus has to offer is by us preaching and living out the gospel, not just preaching philosophies, not just preaching rules and regulations. That's why this congregation has to be a place where Jesus preached, because if we're preaching more about rules than we are about Jesus, we're not preaching the gospel. And those rules do not have the power to bring about renewal and transformation. The only thing that does, again, is the good news of Jesus. That's what is changing you. That's what can change you. And again, I still have a long, long ways to go with that. And maybe you do as well. So let's preach Jesus. Let's let the peace of Christ rule in our hearts. And let's let the word of Christ dwell in us richly. And let's share the good news with our neighbors. Please let us know, again, if there's anything that we can do to help you, how we can help walk with you or pray with you, or maybe you've decided that you want to embrace this resurrected living by being buried with Christ in the waters of baptism, to be raised up, transformed, and renewed. Now would be an opportune time to make that known as together we stand and we sing.